Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, why the path to Pluto was more perilous than you know. But first, what to understand about what the Supreme Court said yesterday about the wedding cake and religious freedom. This was a case out of Colorado in which a cake baker didn't want to create a wedding cake for a gay couple. And yesterday, seven justices said the cake maker was within his rights to refuse. We're turning now to Anthony Weiner. He's a professor of law at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law in the studio with me. Professor, thanks for coming over. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I use the phrase religious freedom in the intro. Is that what this case was about? And is that what the decision was actually about?
Well, in a roundabout sense, yes. You mentioned in your intro that there's a conflict here between the baker, who has religious objections to same-sex weddings and same-sex marriage, on the one hand, and the state, on the other hand, which has an interest in protecting its citizens from invidious discrimination, and the individual gay couple that had come in to ask for the cake to be baked for them. And there is that conflict. But the Supreme Court did not resolve that conflict as between the baker's interest in his constitutional freedom of religion and the state and the individual's interest in the cake.
And why do you say that that part of this was not resolved, which is part of the reason that this case was watched so closely? Why wasn't it resolved?
Well, it wasn't resolved because there were problems in the way that the Colorado administrative and judicial authorities had handled this as the case was coming up. Some of the members on the Colorado Commission of Human Rights had made disparaging statements in public hearings concerned with this matter. They had said that it was despicable to use one's religion in a way that impaired the rights of others, that any use of such religion was mere rhetoric, and they compared the use of religion in that way to the Nazi Holocaust and to slavery. So as far as the court majority was concerned, that demonstrated hostility to religion, and it provided an environment that was not neutral with respect to religion. So that was one problem, and then there was another problem too.
One of the arguments that the Colorado gay couple made was that if the court allows the cake maker to decline to make the wedding cake, what does this mean for other groups, classes that might be discriminated against, African American couples, et cetera? How did the court receive that argument, and did they respond to it?
They did not really respond to that argument. The court has various statements in its majority opinion saying that LGBT people need to be respected, that they should not be treated as outcasts by the state or by others, that they have a right to their dignity, and that the state has a right and sometimes the obligation to make sure they have access to civil rights. The court said those things, but those things are what constitutional scholars and courts and lawyers call dicta, and we can pay attention to that, but they're not governing in the case. The court is just criticizing what happened procedurally here in the Colorado state agencies and courts, and is not saying anything about this conflict between freedom of religion on the one hand and anti-discrimination on the other.
There's a St. Cloud case, as you know, that involves videographers, a couple who say that they are, I think, evangelical Christians, and they don't want to have to videotape the weddings of gay couples. Does this decision, described as you've just said as pretty narrow on some technicalities, say anything to us about where that case could go?
No, I don't think it says anything at all. And I do want to make a point about that case from St. Cloud, and that's a distinction. What happened in the Colorado case was that the gay couple came into the bakery, they were refused, and a state action was commenced against the bakery. What happened in St. Cloud was different. There was no enforcement action against the videographers. They were the ones who began began the situation. They went to a federal court and asked for a preliminary injunction against the state human rights law before it had even been enforced against them, before anybody even talked about it.
In some ways, they're being proactive to say, we don't want to be in a situation where we have to do this.
That's right. But since they were, there was no state apparatus that was applied against them in the way there was in Colorado. And so there's nothing to complain about, even if the Minnesota authorities were as perhaps less circumspect than they should have been.
So what might happen in the St. Cloud case if indeed they are presented with an opportunity or a request to videotape a gay wedding? Then does that, and they refuse, then does that case basically start over again?
Well, that might happen, I suppose. It could if they don't pursue the current action they have now, but they just go back to regular business.
Uh-huh.
And then their behavior would be subject to the Minnesota human rights laws, and the Minnesota state apparatus would kick into effect. Hopefully, and I'm sure, the Minnesota agencies involved and the courts involved would pay due regard to what happened yesterday.
I guess I'm asking about that again to say, does what the court said about this Colorado case give us any kind of insight on if cases like the one in St. Cloud eventually work their way through the system?
Not in terms of how this conflict is resolved, not in terms of how the conflict between anti-discrimination and free exercise of religion is resolved. It does give guidance to the state authorities as to what to say and how to behave when they're dealing with a situation.
Curious as to whether you think the U.S. Supreme Court is eager or reluctant to get into the middle of some of these questions around religious freedom.
The way I looked at this, I did not take this as a sign of reluctance on the part of the Supreme Court majority to deal with this conflict. I looked at it differently as I read the Kennedy majority opinion. What I see is an awareness that the way appellate courts operate is that they have to be able to rely on what lower courts and lower governmental agencies do. The lower courts and the agencies build a record, they collect the facts, they develop the issues, and they begin allocating the facts to the issues. And if there is a strong record below and all the issues and facts are marshaled in an appropriate way, that helps to ensure the integrity and correctness of the appellate ruling. But if the procedures below are faulty in any substantial way, that could impair the effectiveness and correctness of the appellate ruling.
If I might just translate that, there were so many problems with this case leading up that you see no indication that the U.S. Supreme Court would be hesitant to take it on. But this case had a lot of problems.
That's right. And they were problems not necessarily with the way the actors behaved, the bakery and the couple, but with the way the state authorities behaved.
Anthony Weiner is in the studio with me this hour for the beginning of the hour. He's a professor of law at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law, and we asked him to come in and give us some insight and interpretation of what the U.S. Supreme Court said yesterday on this case out of Colorado. There was a lot of speculation about the role that Anthony Kennedy would play in this swing vote justice as he is. Again, hear you on the narrowness of this. Do you get any kind of indication of where Kennedy might be on a broader religious freedom case that doesn't have the problems that the Colorado case had?
Well, he's the author of the majority opinion, and he does have several statements in the majority opinion indicating an awareness of the importance of maintaining the availability of civil rights to LGBT people. So perhaps other justices on the majority might not have phrased the opinion that way. So I think that's an indication that he would certainly give due regard for the rights of LGBT people in any result that happened, and that it wouldn't be that it would be as solicitous as possible for their rights.
I think I hear you saying that you think should a broader case of religious freedom end up before the U.S. Supreme Court, that Kennedy could be relied upon to vote with the liberal majority on this, or no? Am I going too far on that?
That may be a little too far. I think he can be relied upon not to have a really aggressive stance against the LGBT position, and relied upon not to have an aggressive and overly broad view with respect to what religion allows business people to do. He also quoted with approval, or cited with approval, a Supreme Court case from the civil rights era in which the Supreme Court determined that just a regular business person couldn't use his religion as a basis for refusing service to people who were racial minorities, for example. So the fact that he saw that connection may be an indication.
Professor, thank you very much. Really good to have the clarity on this and the insight. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
Anthony Weiner, a professor of law at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law, and giving us some insight on what the U.S. Supreme Court decision meant yesterday on this case out of Colorado.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.